It's Tuesday, September 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, world leaders address the United Nations on some thorny issues. Global financial markets tumble again.
We have a very tricky situation here where we can have different scenarios.
An election in Spain gives hope to breakaway elements. Also ahead, we hear about big news from Mars, big news too for James Bond fans. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama and Russian President Vladimir Putin clashed sharply Monday at the United Nations on how to end 4 years of fighting in Syria. Mr. Obama told the annual U.N. General Assembly gathering that after so much bloodshed and carnage, Syria cannot return to a pre-war status quo. But Putin, making his first U.N. speech in a decade, warned that it would be an enormous mistake not to cooperate with the Assad government in fighting the Islamic State insurgents trying to oust the Syrian leader. We're joined now by VOA U.N. correspondent Margaret Bashir for more on the day's speeches. Margaret, let's begin with President Obama.
He sort of was a part lecture about diplomacy and international cooperation and part pep talk on the UN 70th anniversary about the importance of international order. And he said, we all have a stake in each other's success. No country can solve all the world's problems alone. And we must work effectively together or we'll all suffer the consequences. And he was quite clear in saying the United States cannot do everything on its own. And he pointed out that a nation's strength comes not necessarily from its military power, but from its people, and they need to be free to thrive and to be creative.
The president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, of course, is there, and all eyes on him after there have been some military movements in and around Syria. What did he have to say?
Well, I think it was pretty anticipated what he would say. It was no big surprise. I mean, there were certainly direct and indirect references to Russia and Mr. Putin and Mr. Obama's speech, and, the United States is very unhappy about the annexation of Crimea, and Mr. Obama spoke about powers that assert themselves in ways that contravene international law, and so Mr. Putin sort of had his little bit of a rebuttal, and he spoke about sovereignty being about freedom and the right to a future, and, you know, just he sort of refuted some of the things that Mr. Obama said and spoke about other countries that interfere on pretexts of things. So you could see he was not happy with Mr. Obama.
Of course, Iran is another hot topic. I'm sure there has been some discussion.
Yes, the Iranian president spoke a lot about the Iran nuclear deal that was agreed in July in Vienna with the six major powers. And he said although Iran did not like sanctions, they thought they were illegal when they were imposed on them, that they wouldn't dwell on that and they would move forward now and that this is a new chapter. And he focused on the idea that Iran wants to have economic relations with other countries, that they want to be developed, that they want to become a hub for export-oriented investment. And he said that Iran is eager to show that they can choose a lasting peace based on development and shared interests rather than a volatile peace based on threats.
We, of course, have many world leaders who speak at this annual event. What were some of the other highlights that you heard?
Well, Chinese President Xi spoke this morning, and he pledged $1 billion in aid to the UN Peace and Development Fund, and he promised to create a reserve force of 8,000 UN peacekeeping troops. He also announced China would give $100 million in military assistance to the African Union over the next 5 years to fight terrorism.
We're always glad to hear from Margaret Bashir at the United Nations. Margaret, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, time now to check out how cyberspace is reacting to the UN General Assembly and with our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
Let's begin with a good handle to follow today. What do you have?
Well, for most UN events, the UNSG spokesperson's office account is my go-to handle. And by UNSG, of course, you know, I mean UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. That account's handle is @UN_spokesperson.
Well, G, tell us about a tweet from that account.
Well, that account sent out a lot of tweets from Mr. Pan today, but let's just read one as an example. Demand for @UN peacekeeping has never been greater, Pan Yimin says we must reinvigorate peace operations, hashtag PK Summit. Jim, that tweet got retweeted more than 100 times, and hashtag PK Summit refers to Peacekeeping Summit.
So what about at UN Peacekeeping? That should be a good one to follow for today's meeting.
Absolutely. That's the official Twitter account of the United Nations Peacekeeping. It's been sending a tweet almost every few minutes today, actually, and the tweets are mainly about which countries pledging to do what to contribute to the UN peacekeeping efforts. What's interesting about these tweets is that they're in multiple languages, although most of them are in English.
I see. So what's Washington's pledge?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because it's quite significant. President Obama said Washington will work to double the number of U.S. military officers in U.N. peacekeeping operations in addition to other expansions. And this is what the U.S. State Department tweeted. At PK Summit, POTUS announced expanded U.S. support for U.N. peacekeeping operations. It also added a video clip of the president's remarks, and the State Department is on Twitter at StateDEPT. Jim?
Well, thanks for being here with us. G, always in Studio 22 to give us the best of what's out there on cyberspace. She's also on Twitter at G Abby Lee. And of course, our VOA International Edition team is at VOA underscore IE. We hope you follow us. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, global markets have seen better days. A long-running sell-off is continuing amid new concerns about China. VOA economics correspondent Alexis Christophorus joins us from our New York bureau. Alexis, what happened today?
U.S. stocks closed sharply lower as uncertainty about the timing of a rate hike and concerns about global economic growth continue to weigh on sentiment. The S&P 500 closed down about 2.5%, falling below the psychologically key level of 1900 for the first time since late August. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed near session lows, off about 300 points, but holding just above that psychologically important 16,000 level. The Dow and S&P are now on track for their worst quarter in 4 years. Shares of Apple closed nearly 2% lower despite news it sold more than 13 million units of the new iPhone 6S and 6S Plus models in a record first weekend of sales. Asian markets closed mixed as data from China showed industrial profits declined 8.7% in August from a year ago, the largest drop since 2011. The next big catalyst for global markets will be the September unemployment report in the U.S. due out on Friday. Jim?
Well, as the markets struggle to find a bottom, China's sluggish economy is forcing some e-commerce giants to target new customers.
That's right. And so players like Alibaba and JD.com are now focusing on expanding their user bases to rural regions. The objective here is to reach out to the untouched user base in those rural areas and to boost the online sales, which in turn will, of course, generate more revenue. According to a report from the China Internet Network Information Center, the number of internet users in China reached 668 million in June of this year. This accounts for nearly 49% of China's total population. The internet penetration rate in urban areas is around 64%, whereas the penetration rate in the rural region is only 30%. Last year, many villages in China were introduced to internet-enabled smartphones thanks to government programs, and many consumers had their first experience with online shopping. The number of online shoppers grew at a rate of 41% in rural regions. regions. Those figures clearly suggest a strong potential for increased online shopping in rural regions of China. E-commerce players like Alibaba, JD.com, Tencent Holdings, and Baidu are stepping up their game and trying to expand their logistics network to these rural regions. Jim?
While the e-commerce giants battle it out online, you can always find great economic information online and on air with Alexis Christophorus from New York. Alexis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.
Voters in the northeastern Spanish region of Catalonia Sunday gave the pro-secessionist group Together for Yes 48% of the vote in parliamentary elections, giving those who wished to break away from Spain a bit of a boost, although not a majority in their bid to seek eventual independence. If they are able to form a coalition with the leftist pro-independence Popular Unity Candidacy Party, they will command a slight majority of seats in the 135-seat regional parliament. Atlantic Council of Spain analyst Carlos Castillo told VOA's Victor Beatty that it may be impossible for the two parties to form a coalition.
The two pro-independence parties are very, very different from each other. Together for Yes, it's union of social movement, conservative party, and the Republican left. And then the other party who took 10 seats, it's extreme left. And they are like anti-capitalism, anti a lot of things that are not going to stand well with the rest of the parties.
So it's not altogether a foregone conclusion that they will actually try to form a unity government.
Correct. Extreme left has already said that they are not going to vote for the current president, Artur Mas. They say that he has used these elections also to cover some corruption scandals. And because of Artur Mas being on the conservative side of the spectrum, he had also been very tough on cuts on the social welfare budget, health, public education budget. So the extreme left is not happy with that. They said that Artur Mas probably is not going to be invested president. So we have a very tricky situation here where we can have different scenarios with Together for Yes deciding to just form a minority government or trying to coalesce with extreme left, but with a different candidate altogether.
Why do they want independence? And did the Scottish referendum have any impact on their plans?
The problem is that, and I know it's a technicality, but this was not a referendum, right? This was a regional election. So technically, the things that were counted were seats, were not total votes. The total vote was won by the people against independence. So there's been a 52-53% of the vote, which were people saying no to independence. So now we have a situation in which the popular vote has said no. The seats won by the pro-independence is a yes, it's an absolute majority. And so I think the central government will have to think through the situation, sit down, and try to negotiate. An additional layer of issues here is that we have general elections in Spain in December. So I'm not sure a lot will move until then. I think everyone's kind of waiting and seeing what's going to happen in the general election to then open a new phase in this whole conflict.
Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy's ruling Popular Party government says it will use all legal means to prevent Catalonia from breaking away. But what does that mean?
The Popular Party did something that also upset a lot of Democrats in Spain, including the Socialist Party, including a lot of others. They just did an express reform of the Constitutional Court, something that hadn't been done in 30 years of democracy. They decided to give the court the power to actually prevent Artur Mas from declaring independence and basically like intervening in the region if it's needed, which basically alters the balance between powers. All of a sudden, you have a constitutional court who's going to be able to decide when a president is fit or not to rule a region, which is a total flip of the argument, right? So really, he cannot do much.
Atlantic Council Spain analyst Carlos Castillo. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
NASA scientists have found strong evidence of saltwater streams on Mars, at least during the Red Planet's summer. VOA's Victoria Maki shares the findings that the space agency announced Monday with International Edition host Susan Yockey.
What NASA's telling us today is that they found what they're calling recurring slope lineae. Now, really what this means is that they've got really strong evidence, from what they're saying, that there is some sort of water flow on Mars. Now, before we, you know, NASA knew that there was frozen water on Mars, but this shows that there could actually be what they say is very salty, briny water actually flowing, perhaps during summer, on the planet.
But not actually like a creek or anything, more like a salt flow, a wet salt flow.
Right, correct. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, they've repeated it every single time they've answered questions about it. Very salty, lots of minerals. And it doesn't mean that they've got any indication of life so far, but this, you know, leads them to wonder, you know, could there have been and is there now anything else?
Yeah, it opens up the possibility that maybe once upon a time there was water on there and that could have supported life. And if there is still water there, say under the surface, then that opens up the possibility of having a human activity on Mars, maybe a settlement of some sort.
Sure. And what they're saying is, you know, at least this gives them a good indication of where to look. You know, there's a few more missions planned between now and, you know, 2020. So this really kind of points them in the right direction for where they can start searching, you know, on the ground Mars for forms of life.
This takes baby steps to find out anything. It's so far away, people don't realize how difficult it is to even find this much.
Right. And I mean, they're really planning. I mean, the planning for these scientists is years and decades down the line. I mean, it moves incrementally, slowly. But these guys, you see them right now, they're so, so excited about this finding. I mean, they're just overjoyed with just this little bit of new knowledge.
Well, as NASA celebrates, you can celebrate with a martini, and whether you prefer it shaken or stirred, you might want to enjoy one with a new James Bond film. Of course, there will be theme music, and will it live up to some of the iconic tunes of James Bond past? VOA's Ray McDonald stops by to talk about it. We have had a string of James Bond themes over the years by many famous artists, and now we have another artist joining the club.
That's right. It's going to be Sam Smith. And this was probably the worst kept secret of the year, but it all came out on Tuesday. Sam took to Twitter to say that he will be singing Writings on the Wall, the theme song for the upcoming James Bond movie, Spectre.
Stay with me, 'cause you're all I need. This ain't love, it's clear to see. But darling, stay with me.
These songs tend to become iconic, at least some of them have over the years.
Well, his predecessor was Adele, who did Skyfall a couple of years ago. And if his song comes anywhere near the quality of that, I think Sam will have a great one on his hands. He said that the song was written and recorded back in January, but he's had to keep it a secret right up until now, and he was the favorite all along. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bookmakers were saying, it's going to be Sam Smith, and he kept saying, no, no. But he finally spilled the beans. He said the filmmaker showed him the movie, and he took about 20 minutes to write it.
Songs that are often written quickly sometimes are very inspirational and good, because we've heard of a lot of hit songs written in just a few minutes that mm-hmm. have become iconic as well. So that bodes well.
I'm hoping inspiration struck. As a historical sidelight, Jim, I should mention that this is the first time since 1965 that a British male solo artist has done a Bond theme. Tom Jones was the last to sing one with Thunderball.
He always runs while others walk.
Spectre will premiere October 26th in the United Kingdom, and here in the U.S., we'll have to wait until November 6th.
Well, he spilled the beans on the song, but I guess he hasn't revealed the plot yet.
They'd kill him.
James Bond would. Yes. Ray McDonald with us, talking James Bond and Sam Smith.
Shaken, not stirred. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Ray. You've been listening to International Edition, and of course, you can find us at our website, voanews.com. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zineb Abdel-Rahman. Follow us on Twitter, too, while you're online, at VOA_IE. That's about all we got. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the White House on September 23rd, President Barack Obama celebrated the visit to the United States of the first ever Latin American pontiff, Argentinian-born Pope Francis. President Obama noted the excitement aroused by the spiritual leader of the globe's 1.2 billion Catholics, including 70 million Americans. In addition to praising the mission of the Catholic Church to feed the hungry and shelter the homeless, President Obama said the enthusiasm that greets Pope Francis must be attributed not only to his role as Pope, but to his unique qualities as a person: humility, gentleness of rhetoric, and generosity of spirit. Mr. Obama noted Pope Francis' call to Catholics and non-Catholics alike to put the poor, the vulnerable, and the marginalized at the center of individual and societal concern, stand up for justice and against inequality. He praised the Pope's support for solving disputes diplomatically, his help in opening the door to a new relationship between the United States and Cuba, his reminders that people are only free when they can practice their faith freely, his call to recognize the obligation shared by all to protect the planet from climate change and preserve it for future generations. In his reply, Pope Francis, referring to himself as the son of an immigrant family and happy to be the guest of a country, as he said, largely built by such families, sounded many of the same themes as President Obama: the requirement to build a just society that respects the right to religious liberty, the challenge of responding to millions of people who have been overlooked by or excluded from the economic system, the need to address climate change. After leaving the White House, Pope Francis proceeded to other venues and events in Washington, including the celebration of the first saint to be canonized on U.S. soil, Spanish missionary Junipero Serra, an address to a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress, the first pontiff to do so, a lunch with the homeless in downtown D.C. Throughout Pope Francis's visit, Americans of every creed and race have listened to his message. In his address to the pontiff, President Obama suggested why. "You shake our conscience from slumber and give us confidence that we can come together in humility and service and pursue a world that is more loving, more just, and more free."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.